Good morning. You're tuned into Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local, brought to you as always via BFF.fm. I'm Laura Wenis, and with me today are Joe Ravano-Barros and Noah Arroyo from the Public Press. Hey, guys.
Hey, good morning.
How are things on this foggy morning?
Things are pretty good. I'm happy to be here.
Good. I'm glad to have you. Let's talk about something, I guess, somewhat juicy. We can call this topic juicy, right? Today, we're discussing money in politics. And I would like to talk a little bit about a piece that Noah just published in the San Francisco Public Press regarding a new ballot measure that's going to restrict the way that lobbyists can lobby in San Francisco.
Right.
I think I saw this among the not quite answered questions in your briefing on the article, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway. Why should we care?
Well, we should care because there are elected officials, and we want to care about how they make their way to office and to whom they're beholden, kind of in a general sense. I mean, There are certain things about this ballot measure that make it interesting. More than anything else, it opens up a conversation about how money gets to our elected officials. Maybe it's best if I describe how bundling works.
Please describe for us, uninitiated, who may not have read the required reading for this morning's seminar.
Well, it was kind of dense.
Yeah. So what's going on with this ballot measure, and what are the practices that are being discussed?
Well, right now, so if you're a lobbyist and you lobby somebody in office, somebody who's been elected to office, you have to tell the Ethics Commission, which is the city agency that tracks this sort of behavior, you have to tell the Ethics Commission about it after the fact. This ballot measure, really what I find most interesting about it, is that it would set up a new system, or rather it would augment the existing system, so that instead of lobbyists having to do that sort of after-the-fact reporting, they would have to tell the Ethics Commission ahead of time when they were going to lobby somebody. So with that knowledge, the Ethics Commission could then have an opinion about that lobbyist giving contributions to certain candidates during election season. So basically it works like this. I'm a lobbyist and I say, hey, look, I want to lobby, I don't know, the Planning Commission or something. Or rather, let's say Planning Department. Or even better, let's say the mayor's office. So I want to lobby the mayor's office, and I've registered for that. And then election season comes around, somebody's running for mayor, and I'm the lobbyist. Now I want to donate vast sums to the mayor's office, and we can talk about how that all works. That's the bundling part, but hold on to that. So then the Ethics Commission turns around and says, well, you know, you can't anymore. This ballot measure would make it so that you could not give money to an office or to a candidate running for an office that you were registered to actively lobby. So the registration system is the first part, and then the second part is, well, lobbyists can no longer give to those candidates for office that they plan to lobby.
So the idea is to reduce influence on somebody who the lobbyists expects to attain power.
Yes, exactly. And this becomes pretty relevant when you start looking at the numbers. Lobbyists have generally given, well, put it this way, every person has a maximum contribution limit of $500, right? So I can give $500 to a candidate running for any office. So can you, so can Joe. Lobbyists have this special other ability that technically everybody has. This is the bundling part. But lobbyists are very good at it, and that's they can collect other people's contributions, which, you know, still have the same maximum limit. So everyone can contribute individually $500, but the lobbyist comes along and says, hey, look, I know 20 people who all want to contribute $500, and I'll just deliver those contributions on their behalves to the candidate. Basically, bundling, that's what that is, becomes a sort of fundraising method. Now, who are the candidates who have had the greatest bundles? They tend to be the ones, you know, that are attached to the top seats of power. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in 2015, it was Mayor Ed Lee. Mm. And the runner-up candidate who had the greatest bundles, also from lobbyists, was Julie Christensen for District 3. The runner-up candidate after that was Vicky Hennessy. Mm-hmm. And both of these candidates were Mayor Ed Lee's, you know, preferences for those offices.
Mm-hmm. So is there any sort of check on whether or not the lobbyist is in fact bundling contributions from different people rather than simply reaching into the pocket of somebody with a particularly deep pocket? Or can it be contributions from a corporation, or how does this work?
Well, the $500 per donor or contributor limit, that applies for candidate races. So let's say that they're okay. So it's kind of, I don't want to get too into the weeds here. Speaking of which, In the Weeds is a great new segment of the public press. Go to sfpublicpress.org to check it out. It's awesome. Super jargony.
What was that URL again, though?
Oh, that was, you may have missed it. It was sfpublicpress.org. So anyway, back to the things. Yeah, so...
So, corporations, can they donate this $500 limit? Is there a check on donations that are bundled to make sure that they are, in fact, even being bundled rather than simply coming from one person who is using this as a way to circumnavigate the $500 per person limit?
Right. First off, if the committee during an election season, if the committee that somebody is donating to is not a candidate committee, but a general purpose committee, such as, you know, yes on Prop A, no on Prop A, then the per person limit does not apply. You can, so if you're a corporation, you can give hundreds of thousands of dollars to that committee, you know, thanks very much, Citizens United. Mm. But for candidate committees, know that the general rule is, you know, $500 per person. Now that said, yeah, what I think you're getting at is that, let's say if you've got a wealthy person, that wealthy person with $10,000 can just find a bunch of friends who all sort of pretend to give that money, you know, to the lobbyist for that campaign committee. So the money is actually coming from a single source as opposed to a bunch of different sources.
Is that possible? Is my question.
Oh, it's absolutely possible. Okay. And
and would it still be possible under this ballot measure?
Well, put it this way: it's possible. It's not legal. It's not legal. So,
but there's no check on whether or not it's happening.
Well, how do you find out?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. A lot of this stuff is complaint driven. Right.
Oh, my favorite type of system.
Right. I'm sure you guys talk about this a lot with the planning department and DBI and all of that.
All sorts of city agencies are complaint driven. Yeah, because I think just by nature of the sheer volume of problems that would need to be addressed and the total impossibility of being able to address them all proactively.
Right.
I mean, there's just, especially if we're talking about buildings, just to, you know, as an aside for a second.
Right.
You almost cannot imagine any other system besides a complaint-driven system, because where would they even start? I mean, with millions of units, I assume. Maybe not quite millions, but, you know.
Well, you don't know. There are a ton of ADUs out there.
That's true. All those in-laws.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, complaint-driven systems are the systems that we work with. But they have inherent problems.
No, absolutely they do. One of the things that I was surprised to find out was that, this ballot measure, if passed, it would also make it so lobbyists could not give gifts to politicians, city officials, candidates for office. So gifts in general, not just gifts for the candidates who are running for offices that they actively lobbied. And so I did a little digging. It's not that hard. So how many gifts can they currently give? Well, 25 gifts valued up to $25 each, up to 4 times per year.
See, that just strikes me as so bizarre, because how do you value? I mean, they self-report the value of these gifts, right?
Well,
so they just kind
no,
of make
don't.
Up some value? No.
No, don't. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. When it comes to lobbyist gift giving, the city doesn't track it. So
they don't even self-report it.
Exactly. Lobbyists are not required to self-report these gifts. So this all begs the question. You're the city, and you want to make sure that lobbyists are not giving more than 4 gifts at value each of $25 per. How do you police that if no one has to report anything? It kind of means that somebody else, you know, Joe Schmo, has to figure out that a lobbyist has given not 4 gifts, but 5 at least. How does that person track that?
Mm-hmm. How do they know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And do we have any idea how big of a problem lobbyist contributions are? Like, how much candidates are getting from lobbyists versus, you know, independent expenditures, regular contributions from individuals like you and me?
I have a sense of it. Honestly, I haven't dived that deep into that. That's kind of the next step for this thing. I saw when I was doing this story, I saw that Mayor Lee and his picks were, you know, in the lead when it came to bundled contributions. It begs a question, though. We've got data going back to 2010. I would like to look that far back and see if that trend is consistent, because, you know, Mayor Lee has run more than once. So What I saw just cruising through it makes it kind of look like that. And something else I noticed was that it looks like lobbyists really love to give contributions, as in not just bundle contributions, but predominantly to give contributions from, you know, from their own pockets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when I look at the Ethics Commission website, I mean, once again, I have to really crunch the numbers to be able to say something definitively, but it sure does look like predominantly lobbyists are the ones giving these personal contributions. Now, that kind of makes sense, you know, as a cynic about politics. That also kind of makes sense just understanding how the system works. These
well,
lobbyists
and also if
talk
you're just
to politics
a person.
Every day.
Yeah, exactly. And, right. And you want to have somebody know that they have your support. I'm sure
right.
they're watching to see who is donating and who is not.
Right.
And you don't want to be going to somebody who you need to lobby and then be like, well, I never really contributed anything to you.
Well, that's true. I more so meant that if I'm a lobbyist and every day my job is to go and talk to city officials, you know, whether it's the mayor or people over at the Planning Commission, then I have a sense for how government works, probably better, probably more thorough than, you know, Joe Schmo on the street. Maybe I care more. Maybe, you know, I want to give all this money to people I believe in.
But if you look at the lobbyist contributions, they're giving left and right. I mean, they're giving
it's true.
Mark Farrell and Jane Kim
it's
and
true.
Scott Wiener
right.
and David Campos, you know,
right.
so it's maybe they believe in all these candidates and their disparate positions, but it seems more like
you said it like it's impossible.
Well, I mean, how could you believe in both what Jane Kim and David Campos stand for and
not
Mark
every
Farrell
single stance.
Wiener?
I mean, I don't think you can like say, oh yeah, I absolutely support these two totally competing at odds measures, but you can consider them both effective politicians.
I could. I think probably
in
more likely
yeah.
they're trying to curry favor with everyone, right? Just
sure.
in case. I mean, these are also all incumbents, so I also have a feeling that mm-hmm. it's not just the mayoral allies, although I'm sure they're big money getters,
mm-hmm.
but incumbents in general get mm-hmm. most of the cash, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna take what you just said and turn it slightly. Curry favor is one way to put it. That's, you know, that's sort of one side of the cynicism spectrum. The other way to put it is these people are face to face with these candidates and incumbents all the time, and I don't know. Maybe it's not even quid pro quo. Maybe that's even, you know, too cynical a way to look at it. Maybe it's just that's the way it works. Hey, look, I support you and
problem.
I have the money.
Yeah, right.
So that's essentially what this ballot measure is trying to change, right?
Yeah, it's trying to change an aspect of that. It would still be possible for a lobbyist to give or bundle a lot of money for a candidate if that candidate was running for an office that lobbyist did not have a track record
mm-hmm.
of lobbying. So I'm a lobbyist and I've only worked, you know, with the Planning Commission for the last 3 years or something like that, even though that's really unlikely. So here's this person running for district, you know, 5 supervisor. Well, I'm going to give the crap out of, I'm going to bundle the crap out of them. Right. So trying to salvage that sentence. So, do that. And then once they get into office, then I'll go back to them and say, hey, why don't you show me some sugar?
Right.
Mm-hmm. This gets into something that we discovered while we were doing our most recent special report, the one that's taken a little bit longer than we wanted to get out, but it's due out on shelves in the next 2 weeks, August 10th. August 10th is when the public press will be publishing its
keep an eye
special
out, y'all.
Report. It's sfpublicpress.org. So anyway, we found out that a lot of these campaigns are interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you wouldn't suspect, but say, for instance, we found there is one person, and you'll have to read to find out whom, but there's one person who was the treasurer for multiple different campaigns during this last election. And it didn't break any laws, but it begs the question, so how interconnected are they actually? How interconnected are the staff of these different campaigns? And how interconnected are the candidates themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what intrigue. We don't even get to know on this show until it comes out.
You really can't
in the
wait.
Paper.
You seriously cannot
yeah,
wait.
Yeah, we can't. Well, let's talk a little bit more concretely and a little bit closer to home. One of the more contentious, I want to say, races this year for this big election in November is the race for District 9 supervisor to replace the currently sitting supervisor, David Campos. And there are 4 candidates, but there are 2 that have raised significantly more money than the other 2. And because we were talking about bundling, is there bundling going on in the District 9 election?
Well, Joe, I think you've taken a closer look at the number. Well, a closer look more recently. I haven't seen any, but have you?
I haven't. I mean, as far as what's publicly reported, mm-hmm. I don't see any bundling. Right. One of the candidates, Hillary Ronan, is the only one to receive contributions from lobbyists. So yeah. She's got $2,700 from six lobbyists. And they're
all lobbyists, right?
Those are all lobbyists for different things. Some of them have lobbied her or Campos before on behalf of Grocery Outlet or the so-called Beast on Bryant, Lennar Corporation, which is building the Titanic mess on South Van Ness.
Right.
But it's $2,700, and there are lobbyist contributions, but she has a total of $270,000 in her campaign. So
like
do
a
the
tenth.
Numbers. It's a not even a tenth, right? It's a 1% thing from lobbyists.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a lot of money in terms of the race, but you're right. I mean, it's still a lobbyist contribution. It raises questions of undue influence. Even if it is just like, oh, I've known, you know, XYZ person for this many years, that seems to me a problem. Why?
Well,
are we friends
either that
with these
or it's just
so
the
much?
Way that it's structured. Like Noah was saying, that's just the way it works right now. And
these are the terms of the relationship.
Exactly.
You know, this is the professional relationship that we
but
have.
What I mean, knowing the public perception of lobbyist contributions, why would you even take the money? I mean, why wouldn't you just say, don't give me 500? If it's just $500, don't give it to me. I mean, it's publicly available information. It's going to look bad when it gets in the press. Why would you take $3,000 from lobbyists if it's really just a drop in the bucket?
What do you mean when it gets in the press?
I mean, when we do our jobs.
Well, okay.
Hoping that we won't, maybe, but...
I think it's kind of that. I think that, you know, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it,
right?
It didn't fall. I think first of all, this is not a topic that gets reported on consistently.
Very much.
And so when it gets reported on, that's great. Because this stuff is publicly available. I looked it up.
It's so easy.
Anyone can. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just takes a little bit of practice before it's quick.
There are, like dozens of forms. But you just type in a candidate's last name and they pop up. Yeah. I mean, lobbyist this person.
You know, so SF Open Data, everybody. Right. SF Open Data, go there.
But while we're talking about lobbyists and those kinds of donations, I think people are also concerned about donations from larger groups,
right.
Which Josh Arce, like you discovered, has plenty of
in that sense.
And I think there's also concern, I'm seeing it on Twitter right now, actually, about the DCCC race and people thinking that DCCC funding has an influence. What have you found?
Well,
in that regard,
like you're right. I mean, so Ronan has $2,700 from lobbyists. Arce has at least more than 10,000 spent on his behalf by a so-called independent expenditure committee, which is what you were talking about earlier, a general purpose committee that can get tons of money from whoever and no cap. So this committee, it also supports other candidates, but so far has given $10,000 to Arce, is primarily funded by the Police Officers Association, which has given actually $82,000 to the organization. And the second biggest donor is Local 261, which is Arce's union. He works for Local 261, which has given almost $60,000. So these are big bucks. They're
so
not
we're talking
all
a different scale here.
Different
entirely.
Scale, different mm-hmm. order of magnitude mm-hmm. altogether.
And just to clarify, the reason why this is allowed to happen is because he's not directly controlling the funds,
right.
ostensibly.
It's like you said, I think it's a Citizens United thing where I'm not allowed to coordinate with this PAC, but I mean, Local 261 is his union. It's funding this PAC. It's spending money on his behalf. And it's true, he's not the only recipient of this money. There's other people running in different districts. Who are getting some cash.
Can I tell you something, John?
Yeah,
can
of course.
I tell you need to watch the expenditures for this committee because, so one of the things that we found when we were doing the special report that is due out on shelves on August 10th is that a lot of these expenditures, a lot of committee expenditures, they, if you look them up, then the line item will be coded for certain expense codes. You know, maybe the code, the abbreviation means something like office supplies, maybe it means
coffee,
whatever. You know, maybe it means salaries for the people who are on the committee. We found plenty of line items with, you know, like hundreds of thousands of dollars as the single line expenditure amount, but the codes were multiple. So one line, say $350,000 for that expenditure, but that expenditure is coded four or five different ways. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? What you really mean
is... Are they
is,
allowed to do that?
Yes. Well, they did it. I don't know if they're allowed to do it, but once again, if Ethics Commission does not actively track this stuff, then kind of doesn't matter if it's outlawed.
So could we call them? I mean, just as journalists and say what's going on.
I could show you the line items, bro.
So, but okay, we're getting into the weeds again about line items here. But what does that mean? It means you can't track specifically what the money is for.
It's exactly just, right. $350,000 went to 5 different things. Uh-huh. That doesn't tell us anything.
How much did, yeah.
Especially when one of those things is office supplies and one of those things is salaries.
Yeah.
Do they have to say what business is associated with this or anything like that?
You know, I couldn't tell you exactly the details off the top of my head. Sorry.
Yeah. But it's troubling. I mean, it's a bunch of money. And like we said, I mean, the POA is this controversial police officers union that has given $82,000 to this committee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have these tens of thousands of dollars pouring into these committees.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about it. Associations that could be perceived negatively in terms of lobbyists. Right. I mean, that really, the POA does not have a great reputation with...
With anyone, almost.
I think with a lot of people, but the left, would say, in general.
But even, I mean, even, you know, mm-hmm. Malia Cohen, London Breed are not of the left, and they have no great relationship with the POA right now.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's just unlimited spending on anyone's behalf. So this committee in particular can spend on as many candidates as it wants, and ballot measures also. So, you know, this money is just flowing in and flowing out to many different outlets.
Right. Right.
And what scale are we talking about generally for contributions toward spending on behalf of a candidate? I mean, this is really in the tens of thousands, right?
It looks like, I mean, so far, you know, Arce has gotten a little more over 10. Marjan Filor, who's running in District 1, has gotten like 7. So it's not a lot each compared to, you know, Arce's got like 180, I think, raised overall. It's still a significant amount of money. I mean, that's a 16th total being spent on his behalf. Mm-hmm. And this is just getting started, right? Independent expenditures, I think, really ramp up in the last couple months, in the last few weeks before an election. Because you can really funnel money to make last-minute changes, which you wouldn't be able to do. Like, a candidate can't just go out and massively fundraise $500 at a time to change things at the last minute, but a corporation can dump $10,000 on you if it really wants to move a race in a particular way.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when you don't have this kind of support behind you? I mean, we have two other candidates in this race that are, you know, if we're just looking at financial just spending power, are essentially non-existent.
They're overspent. I mean, 10 to 1. Like, the next highest, other than Arsene Ronan, is Melissa San Miguel, who's got a little over 15,000, which is a tenth of her next highest opponent. And then Iswari Spania has just 2,600, I think.
And I was speaking to him yesterday, and I think part of the reason why is because people have approached him about supporting him from various, you know, factions and industries and political perspectives, and he's said no. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you almost wonder if people are shooting themselves in the foot for the sake of wanting to maintain some kind of integrity, and then as a result of that, just disappear in this race.
Right. You can't afford almost to do that, to be an honest politician.
Well, I wouldn't say that you are necessarily dishonest. Well,
sure, that's true. I mean, it's true.
Donations.
But a principled politician.
A principled, you know, you're not going to take big money. You're not going to spend a lot of time fundraising from lots of people because, like, let's be honest, if you spend 20 hours on the phone fundraising, that's time you could be learning the issues better. You could be talking to constituents about real problems. But instead, you're just on the phone hitting up people who can give $500 at a time. That's a waste of everyone's time. That's a waste of their time as my representative. I don't want my representative doing that.
So much better to pay a lobbyist to just go and
so much
about
better
to say, and that's why you have to have the money to pay other people to do it for you, because you can't spend your own time as a person who's trying to effect change doing that kind of thing.
Right. I would want. And I don't know that this is true. I haven't looked into this, but I just want to beg the question. I would wonder if it's easier to be, you know, a principled, honest politician at a local level, you know, at a neighborhood level race, than it is to do a citywide. Because even if you have, you know, virtually no money or comparably no money, right, then you can walk around, you can talk to people, you can shake hands. You can't do that even with a citywide race.
Right.
Well, but I think that what we're learning as hyperlocal reporters here following this race very closely is that it's not, and that it may be less impossible to run for a local district supervisor seat as a relatively unknown candidate who does not have a lot of financial backing compared to, you know, trying to run for mayor. Mm-hmm. But I think from the beginning we were seeing that citywide media was looking at the top two candidates, and the top two were determined by how closely they've worked with politics up until now, which is valid, and how much money they're likely to raise.
And so from
the beginning, I think that, you know, the deck is stacked against, like you say, principled, let's say, lesser known candidates, even at the local level.
You know, and we as local journalists even fall into this trap because there's not a lot of polling done in local elections. So it's money is kind of the only way you can measure how are these candidates actually stacked up. And it's money and your own familiarity with them. So, you know, as journalists,
it's a two-way street because they could be reaching out to you
to tell them about the issues. And like,
right, exactly.
You know, right. But I mean, in terms of like trying to paint a picture of the landscape here for a reader, what's actually going on here, we have to report the money because there's not a lot of other means of gauging who's actually doing well here.
And that, the first rule of politics is follow the money.
Sure. I mean, like, we should be reporting on the money anyway.
In our job description.
But it makes readers think that, okay, well, it's just these two candidates, just Ronan and Arce, because we're reporting that they have way more money than the other two. And it kind of is a trap.
Yeah. And we were just talking about this yesterday because Joe's working on this story right now. It's like, here we are, like everybody else, talking about the two candidates with the most money, and they're probably the ones who are going to be quoted. We're trying to reach out to the other candidates as well, but I mean, it almost feels inevitable at this point that we'll also do that. And in a sense, I think it probably is. I mean, we're giving people the sense that that these two are the ones who are the most likely to win, that the competition really is between these two. And I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario, which becomes kind of difficult to navigate at the local level. Because we're not, you know, because like who did it? Who started it? Is it us or is it the fact that they already have more money? Like, where does it begin?
That's fair enough. I'm going to be the optimist who isn't disappointed yet and and say, because that's so often my role. don't ask my colleagues that. They could just reach out to you. I'll say it again. I understand what you're saying, that money is measurable, expenditures are measurable, and they're tracked. So you can just go, I can go on Ethics Commission's website and find out how much money that these guys have spent on what and when. I can do that. And I get that that's an easier story, but you know what's even easier? If they pick up the phone and call us and talk to us about things that matter to them, that's so much easier than us having to go out of our way.
Totally.
And it's because they don't do that. It's because of this sort of adversarial relationship between media and politicians that does not have to persist, that we have to resort to looking for the numbers.
You're right.
And you heard it here first, folks. Noah Arroyo calling out all the local candidates. But we're out of time, so we'll be back 2 weeks from now with our regularly scheduled programming of news and notes from the neighborhood. And if you know something that we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email at missionlocal.com. You can also find us on Twitter, where we are at MLNow. Thanks for joining us, you guys.
BFF.FM.
Thank you so much for tuning in. The whole world's listening, including me.